Hello and welcome to Wonder Pod, episode 160. We're down a man tonight because he's wandering the streets of Boston with a frying pan, apparently. I don't ask. Hell, some days I don't ask. So it's just me and John tonight, so say hello to John.
And then there were two.
Yeah.
Hey, everybody.
Yeah, we voted Glacinator off the island. Sent him to Boston. That's a Dropkick Murphy song, actually. I wonder if he's looking for his wooden leg. I hope somebody gets that joke. We're not going to talk about gaming this week. I think it's a big key here that if you're tuning in for gaming, tune out. You're going to be really hard-pressed to get the cast to talk about gaming until E3, I think. I think we're going to come up with something else.
I will say one thing. Donkey Kong Country Returns 3DS is really good.
Yeah.
But anyway, that's it.
But yeah, I really didn't have a train of thought there, and I wanted to make it go longer, and nothing's coming other than, my God, people are negative and overreactionary. I mean, I thought it would have died down by the time we were done recording the show. I think that's where I just did finally went, okay, I've had enough. I would have thought it would have died down, usually, because we're like on a Friday release most of the time, or a Saturday release, and I like doing that because the week's over. You know, gaming news is usually dead Thursday or Saturday and Sunday, but it just kept rolling on and on to the point where I turned off quite a bit of social media this last weekend and just said, you know, instead of listening to people bitch about half rumors, half truths, and other things, I'm going to actually go and play video games, which is the only chunk of the show that is going to be video game related, what we've been playing. John, what have you been playing this week?
Oh, we are going to mention it. Okay, well, I have been playing Donkey Kong.
Yeah, sorry about that. I kind of blew the intro there saying we weren't going to do any gaming, but maybe I should have said news. My bad. So tell us about Donkey Kong Country Returns for 3DS.
Right on. Well, anyway, that game is a 3DS re-release. It's not really a remake. Well, there are some new features, but I'll get to those in a second. But it's basically the Wii game that came out a couple years ago. They've released it on 3DS now with 3D graphics, of course. And so I've been messing around in the first world, so to speak, the first part of the island before you get to that first boss, and I'm pretty impressed. It's a game that Donkey Kong is a game I wanted to get on the Wii, and I kept waiting for that, you know, that price drop. I was being the cheap bastard that I am, but it didn't really come. And then as soon as the Wii version became one of the player's choice type, or you know, best in Nintendo, whatever, you know, reduced price deal for $30, you know, right around that time, I think they announced the 3DS version. So one bonus about the 3DS version is that you don't have to waggle anything to make Donkey Kong jump. And I'm not sure if it's just a regular jump that you have to, you know, wiggle the remote to make him do it on the Wii, but that didn't really sound appealing, and every review I read said that it's an amazing game, except for that one feature. And so the 3DS version became very tantalizing. The graphics on the game are probably what I am most impressed with, you know, fun gameplay aside. It looks beautiful on 3DS, and I suppose so it should be, considering it's a Wii game. Because I would have said Luigi's Mansion would have been the new benchmark for really pretty graphics on the 3DS, but this one has set the new bar, and it's made me really excited for how games are going to go on 3DS. If they can keep improving and raising the bar, man, oh man, like it's quite something. You know, and with the 3D, it feels like you can just reach in and grab stuff and pull the jungle aside and have a look behind. It's really, really nice. I was never a big Donkey Kong fan growing up. I didn't play the SNES versions. I saw them, and the way that Rare was doing it, it was Rare back then, I think, who was doing it, And they were really cool in how they did the 3D modeling on a 16-bit system. It looked really neat what they were doing, but I was always a Mario fanboy at heart, and I played Mario games on my Nintendo systems, and this is really my first one that I've ever bought. And yeah, it's great stuff. The new modes, if you're familiar with the Wii version, is that they've kind of given you the option to play a little less punishing, because it is a very difficult game, especially as you get later into the game, from everything I understand. They have the classic mode, which is exactly the same as the Wii version, where you have two balloons, which are two hearts, and a fewer number of balloons, which are your lives, basically. But in the new version, in the new mode, you get three off the bat, and you get more opportunities to use items to kind of save your ass in a pinch. So if you fall down a hole, there are these green balloons that you can use to lift you back up out of the hole to keep you from dying, and you can keep moving forward. And there's checkpoints and a lot of saves in between levels and stuff. So it's just to help you move through the game a little bit easier. Now I'm playing the Wii difficulty because I want to play the experience I would have gotten on my system. So yeah, it's I'm definitely going to talk about it more, because I think it's the kind of game that I'm really going to get into. 2D platformers, surprise, surprise. The only other game that I've been playing is Super Metroid. Now that BioShock Infinite is done, and we've actually scheduled our one-shot spoilerific cast. Super Metroid has been my main focal point for console gaming, so I'm just at the point where I can't remember the name of the area, but I got the suit that keeps you that makes you impervious to heat. Deep down into the game now. I'm about 3 hours in. I don't think I'm going to be finishing it in four. Like I was looking online just to see how long is a regular playthrough. Four might have been, I wouldn't say a speed run by any means, but it's definitely a quick pace. So I think it's probably going to be more than that for me. But I'm really, really enjoying it. As I said, I think I said this last week, that it's the more I play it, the more it reminds me how great Metroid Prime was, and it actually makes me wish that there was a Metroid Prime on one of these systems. With they re-released that one for Wii. I would love to see a downloadable version of that on the eShop, that's optimized for the Wii Pad, for the gamepad, or whatever. If I ever saw that again, the Wii re-release, I'd probably get that because they had the trilogy out on one disc. I know that thing goes for like $1 zillion now, which is what's amazing. But I do. But yeah, it's. Metroid is something I've always liked, and so yeah, I can't recommend it highly enough. I mean, what more can I really say about Super Metroid? It's one of the best games ever. And that's it. How about you, Bruce?
We could talk about the email I just got, the marketing email I just got from Xbox explaining everything that the Xbox One does.
Oh.
No, yeah, I the note the sarcasm explains everything that we already knew about it. Delete. I literally got that email when you started talking. As for me, what I've been playing, Worm Online, obviously, it's kind of had its ups and downs. But that's more player related and just kind of how life works. It's rather comical. I have been playing some more Minecraft with Glacinator in Boston and apparently lost somewhere in a back street. I haven't had the server up, but I've been playing some single player with some different goals and maybe some videoable goals. We'll see how that ends up working out. As John said, we're going to do the spoiler cast. We're looking to shoot, or we're looking to record it early next week, and I'll probably try and have it out before Wonder Pod. So if you played BioShock Infinite and want to hear what we think, spoilers and all, you can look forward to that. I also have been playing. What the hell else have I been playing this week? Oh, I've been playing some more Game Dev Story. Which is by Carosoft. I've been playing it on my tablet. It's just a fun game to play. You take on a game development studio and you try and make games the way you would want to make them. I mean, if you see it for cheap on any mobile device, whether it's tablet, phone, it works fine on phone. I've got it on my Android phone as well.
I totally recommend it, and I think I have several times before. It's just a blast. And then finally, I also went back and played Metro 2033 again because I now have an Xbox 360 controller that I can use. And I don't know whether it's my video card or it's just the controls or what, but I am at the point where I'm going to give it one more shot here in the next couple weeks, and then I'm just going to have to put it down because the controls, even with the 360 controller, and I freely admit I'm using my backup one, which is not as spry as my normal 360 controller, the one I use on my console, and I'm still just not happy with the reaction times, the aiming. I seem to get in situations where I am mobbed up close and personal by things, and it, when you add into the mix some of the other game mechanics such as gas masks and other things that shouldn't be spoilers at this point about the game, it just really doesn't work well for a good, positive, conductive experience. I see what it's trying to do, and I can appreciate the game and the story they're trying to tell, even as little as I'm into it. But I'm going to try it one more time. I'm really going to monkey with my PC settings. I'm really going to monkey with the Xbox controller and try and make it as sensitive as possible, which is something I don't generally like to do. And see if it can get a little better, but I'm kind of stuck at a bad point, and I have it figured out, but it's just for the reward, the frustration is almost too much with just the way certain things work. But I can totally see why people liked it and why it's a good game. And it seems like there's something else that I played. I know I played a little more Neverwinter, and you guys don't want to hear about that because nobody besides me plays MMOs. God, it seems like there was something else I played. Oh, I know what it was. I intend in the next couple weeks to give Grand Theft Auto 4 PC another shot with a controller, and I also intend within the next month to actually install Alan Wake and play that since it's got such rave reviews. I told John, who's chuckling there as you can hear, I'm to the point now where if I get the games on the cheap and I get a good taste for them and I get a good idea of why everybody else liked them or if I agree with everybody else or disagree, I'm pretty happy with that. There are so many games out there and so much vying for my attention, as many platforms as I tend to play on and as many genres as I tend to play, that I will fully admit to my mountain-sized pile of shame and that I should really play each one in full, but sometimes it just doesn't happen. And if a game doesn't hit with me, like Metro 2033 seems to not have, then, you know, I'll give it a taste and I'll either go, yeah, people are nuts, or yeah, I agree. And if, you know, if off of a sample size is not enough for you, well, I apologize, but there's only so many hours in the day. It's only so much free time. But that's what I've been playing this week. I do have to say, though, John, that outside of a little lagginess, and that may be because of dual monitors and I don't close everything I probably should close beforehand like a good PC gamer should, the what the hell is it called, Steam Big Picture or whatever,
mm-hmm.
works pretty well with the 360 controller on the computer and on a 24-inch screen.
Mm-hmm.
I've been pretty impressed with it.
Yeah, I thought it was, you know, the interface itself, you know, it's so console-like, you know. But it works well.
Yeah, I'm if I played my 360 a little less. Oh, that's the other game I forgot. I played more of Call of Juarez Gunslinger. You know, it gets a little repetitive as you go along, but it's still a lot of fun. The funny thing about the game is the aiming system, much like Metro 2033, was kind of bugging me in Call of Juarez Gunslinger. And then one of the times I booted it up on my 360, I saw who made it. Now, the company that made it was called Techland. It's called Techland. If that name sounds familiar to you, it should, because they're the ones that made Dead Island.
another game that the fight controls I was really never all that thrilled with, and they didn't feel as crisp as they could. But outside of a tiny bit of repetitiveness and a tiny bit of control issue, as John coined the term last week, Callaware as Gunslinger is a great Red Dead Redemption patch. and really, for you know, 1500 point downloadable title, that's all about it needs to be. I did not have enough time to finish it this week, and I would probably attempt to finish it this weekend just because that one's close. I'm like over half done, so that one's close enough that it shouldn't really stay in the pile of shame. That's almost too much. So that is all I've been playing this week. Yeah, I don't know, John. You said you got into it, you got used to the controls, but I'm having problems with ending up with like 17,000 mutant dog things like piled up at my feet, killing me.
Oh yes.
And while tolerable in some instances, that being the outcome every time, no matter how hard you try to back up and use the weapons correctly and bring the guns onto target, really kind of started to grate on me.
Yeah.
And it's the swing. It's the, you know, you were trying to determine a specific thing that was bothering you about the controls of the weapons. It's the swing. I'm not sure if that's a gaming term, but it is actually a firearm term, as bad a word as those are around the world these days. The swing from one target to the next feels really sloppy. And I still can't quite figure out if I haven't set my settings right on or dumbed them down enough on my PC or if that's just the game.
I think in some part it is the game. I did get used to it over time, and I'm trying to remember what I did to kind of figure that out. Is there a decent melee attack in that game? I can't remember.
Yes, when I remember what button it is. Because the other mistake, the other problem I've had is going from controller to keyboard and mouse on a PC game. That functionality on Steam is still new enough that while games accept it, they don't give you the button mappings.
Yeah.
And so, like, putting on and taking off the gas mask became a problem at one point. And melee, I always forget which one is melee. That works some.
Yeah.
With the little doggies, but it's...
What you really need going... As much as there's a lot of different kinds of weapons, you really kind of want to stick with, I think it's the shotgun with the bayonet on the end. Once you find that, don't get rid of it.
I don't think I've gotten that yet.
Yeah, it's like a semi-automatic shotgun with lots of rounds that you can load it up with, and then also a quiet high-powered rifle. There's one that you can use that has a one that you pump with air. Yeah, that one's pretty good because then you can shoot it without making any noise as well, because the noise attracts a lot of those enemies as well. So if you get those two things, you're pretty well set for the game, unless you find a better version of those guns.
Well, I'm escorting. The other problem is I'm escorting an NPC from one point to the other very early on in the game, and he's not very helpful.
Mm.
That always kind of gets on my nerves. Which is something we will discuss in the BioShock spoiler show, because that plays a pretty significant role in that game.
Yeah.
But that is all we've been playing, and I apologize if the intro was confusing to you. I didn't. What we've been playing is a given, whether you like the segment or not. If it piles up for too many weeks, we're in deep doo-doo. Because we all play so many games and dig through, or, you know, tend to jump from one game to the other because there's so many out there. But let's move on. The first thing I want to talk about tonight, John, is, and this one kind of just struck me, and I'm sure it probably
needs some explaining because all I put in our notes was wearable tech. There's been a lot of rumors about Apple and I think Google making a high-tech watch, like a phone watch. And then, of course, you have Google Glass, which, you know, of course, my privacy. My privacy's being destroyed. You're out in public. It's called public for a reason, you fuck wheel. You know, I love the people that scream about the privacy in this. I need to get this tangent off my chest. But at the same time, videotape everything with their cell phones. Mm-hmm. Because God help us all if you don't park correctly. there's that aspect of it. But does any of this stuff appeal to you, or does some of this stuff feel like a reach? Like, phones have gone as far as they can go.
Yeah. I would really have to try to get a good gauge of the utility of these things. Is it something that's actually going to improve my life day to day? I mean, when I went from my moderately intelligent phone to my iPhone, I did notice a significant difference in my ability to access information on the fly and be able to interact with people, like these things, simple apps that are built into the thing, like the FaceTime, that kind of stuff. It was so much of an upgrade to something that's useful to me. I just don't like the Google Glass one. I don't see why I'd want to have a constant feed of something in my eyes while I'm trying to enjoy the outdoors or out in the public or whatever. That doesn't really do anything for me. Having it all on a watch might be a little bit better. Like, it's, I don't have to pull something out of my pocket to use it. It's just there on my wrist. That sounds a little bit better, maybe. But I really would want to get a better gauge of what I can do with these things, other than what I can already do on my phone.
For me, the watch sounds interesting. But designs of watches are getting really fucking out of hand. We're going back to, I love watches. It's the only jewelry I wear outside of sunglasses. Quote, unquote, yeah. Male jewelry. Because I'm also not married, so I'm not required to wear any rings. And I don't like rings anyway. And I like a really, I'm a very much a Swiss person. I'm not a Swiss person that can afford most of, Tag Heuer and Tissot watches, but I like very well designed, very classic styling watches, and I don't have a ton of watches, but I do like them a lot. A kind of smart watch doesn't appeal to me because I think they're going to be this Flavor Flav sized affair that's gonna make me feel like my arm's got an anchor on it.
Yeah, it makes me wonder exactly what, how. Yeah, I never really thought about the form factor. If it's this big, massive, like if it's a phone on my wrist, no, I won't be buying that. I wouldn't be getting that. What I picture in my mind is kind of like a one of the generation of iPod. Nanos is that little square one,
right?
They had a touchscreen, something like that. But I don't know how much you can do on something like that. You know what I mean?
Well, that's kind of the other thing. And I have to admit, like you, I'm a recent. Well, it's going to be 2 years here in the fall. Adopter of smartphones. And I do find them handy, but I still treat them just like I did my dumb phones. I'm at work, they go in the glove box. When I don't want to be disturbed, they go off. so I'm not imminently gettable. And if you think about it, I have a witness right here. If John or Glacinator or Pat or G or Gunsage or anybody needs me for something, I get back in a timely manner, do I not? Mm-hmm. So it's not like
I'm avoiding dealing with my responsibilities or people that need something from me, but at the same time, it has its usefulness. Like yesterday, I was taking a friend of mine's wife from an appointment to a couple places because my buddy had to be out of town for a meeting, and I couldn't remember a street here in town. And she's recently moved here, so she doesn't know the area very well. And I went, "You idiot, you have a smartphone in your glove box. Google Maps, this road. Oh yeah, now I know." It was just more of a primer, a reminder of where the road was, I knew of it. I just couldn't remember exactly where it was. So smartphones, amazingly enough to me, have uses, but the to make that this long ramblier, form factor is a major concern for me. I have to, it has to have a functionality to it. It has to have some kind of design that fits with my life. That's the other thing, Google Glass, what you're talking about. Because of the privacy concerns and the privacy Fruit Loops, I want it in a set of sunglasses. I don't want anybody knowing I'm using it. I have no intention of going, rogue voyeur and videotaping everybody I see. I like the concept, although what you brought up is a very valid point that I would need to research or need to see for myself to find out if it's going to ruin a day of fishing or a day out in the park with friends or whatever. But I want a form factor that allows me privacy from people knowing I'm using it. Because it works both ways. Because don't you think that if people saw that you had it, you would be bothered in one sense or another? Either people wanting to know what it was or people bitching at you because you're ruining their privacy while they're in fucking public.
Yeah, looking at you in the face without looking you in the eye, looking when that half cocked is like, "Are you recording me right now?"
Well, see, I mean, the sarcastic smartass in me almost wants that because then my response would be, "No, but I am now, you douchewaffle." I mean, so I want the Terminator one. I want something that actually the sunglasses that Arnold wore in what was that, Terminator 2? Or a style I like. I want something along those lines that I cannot, you can't see what. To be quite honest, I'd also be happy. Let me ask you this. Would you be happy with a nerfed version that doesn't record, that just allows you to see the internet and other things?
Data.
Yeah.
Again, it would come down to utility, right? Is if it's some ticker feed of sports news coming across my glasses, like, do I really need to see that? Is it going to improve my day at all? I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose it would depend on how you could program it,
Yeah.
to like, can you plug it into a PC or a Mac and tell it, "I only want text messages,"
Yeah.
or "I only want text messages from the following people"?
What I don't understand is how it would actually even work. Like you can't, there's no touch interface, I guess, other than maybe a button on the frame, I would assume, right? I mean, what does it connect? Would your glasses connect to your 3G network or 4G network, or does it connect to your phone and transmit that way? Yeah. Is it a second screen?
Yeah, I haven't really looked up the specifics on Google Glass, although more of the information's getting out. The form factor just threw me off so badly that it's just like I don't know. Slap it
Yeah.
in a set of Oakleys and we'll talk. I mean, because or SunClouds, again, like a lot of things, I use very specific brands because I have a big fat head. Not because I'm fat, because I was just born with a big bloody head.
Big forehead, big head. And so, you know, so sunglasses are something that I am very fussy about. Kind of like what you were talking about with Oculus Rift and glasses.
Glasses over my glasses, yeah.
Right, you know, so I'm very fussy about, and I'm sure you are, because you have to wear glasses every day, you know. They need to fit right.
Exactly, yeah.
Speaking of that, let's actually, since we're just doing wearable tech news right at the moment, I saw a video on Tested.com's YouTube stream. I can find the link for you later and throw it on Facebook if you want, for you, sure. John. Sorry, audience at home, you can go search Tested.com's YouTube link. They had Jamie Hyneman, one of the Mythbusters.
Yep.
If you've ever watched Mythbusters, he wears glasses. They ran him through a tech demo from Epic using Oculus Rift, and he took his glasses off. And he seemed to be just fine with it. Said he could see everything, said the resolution looked good. You know, they didn't specifically ask him if his glasses were, you know, if it was, you know, causing any problems.
Mm-hmm.
But for being Jamie, you know, who's famously known for being grumpy and kind of curmudgeonly,
yep.
both on and off screen, he seemed very impressed with it.
Hmm.
And funnily enough, an application he talked about that I never thought of is on that show they do a lot of remote controlled vehicles. Like,
oh, yeah.
Full size vehicles. You know, ones that you cannot be in when it crashes.
Yeah. You can set up a camera in there. Yeah, that's a good idea.
Yeah, he's actually done a little bit of rudimentary head tracking using a camera and remotes and servos. But Oculus Rift to be able to drive a vehicle when you cannot see it. Because they had a myth where it was a falling car. A car had to be at a certain point for another car to fall from the sky and crash into each other at the same time. It was one of those ones where the mythology was pretty loose, but hey, they're going to crash shit into each other.
Right.
You know, and I was amazed that they got it. Because driving a car with a remote control and a camera on the car that doesn't give you the view when you have the steering wheel in your hand, and Jamie talked about this in the video, it's damn near impossible to hit a spot, you know, where you need to be at the proper speed, proper. Yeah, I think my point was, is it'll be interesting, John, if there's ever a demo for one, like an electronics store that you can go to, which I suspect there will be.
Well, I would say there's going to have to be to sell that thing.
I would be interested to see you try it with and without your glasses and see what happens.
Yeah, I mean, if you can adjust the focus, you know, I don't know if that's possible or not.
If it is, I think it's done software, because he just strapped it on, and I heard one of the Tested.com host guys, they kind of do things with Jamie and Adam. It's kind of like Tested.com meets Mythbusters kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. Some actual cool stuff. It's one of the few video podcasts I actually sit through. They have one with Adam and a couple guys. It's called Still Untitled, The Adam Savage Project. It's really fun if you like that kind of nerdy maker, builder stuff, which I do. I heard one of the hosts off camera tacking away on a keyboard, and I'm not sure what he was doing, whether he was just running the Epic simulation or whether he was running some resolution, you know, controls, because I would suspect that you could do it with software.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because, you know, you have a certain vision correction with your glasses, correct?
That's right.
I would suspect that you could change the resolution in a 3D VR environment to where it would match your vision.
You think you would, wouldn't you?
You know, I would think that could be handled with software at this point. You know?
Mm-hmm. I think so.
But I had to admit that they had a split screen and they showed what Jamie was looking at. They were recording what Jamie was looking at. I assume using Fraps or something, probably more pricey and better than the Fraps, which is what I use because it was cheap. I was pretty impressed with the Unreal 4 tech demo they had for it.
Just the demo in general, you mean? Like,
well, just how his movements looked pretty fluid, even through recording. He was able to look up, look down, you know. The resolution was pretty good. It was something like, oh, it was from a game that came out on mobile. Oh, man, like Ultimate Fortress or something like that. And I'm sorry, folks. We kind of went off on a tangent, which is fine because that was kind of what this whole show was going to be tonight. But it looked really impressive. It looked really good. It looked really impressive. Yeah. And I'm not even 100% sure it was Unreal 4. It was Unreal Engine. The only thing that Jamie was mad about in the tech demo, and so was I, is he couldn't jump off the cliff. Like, he was running along a cliff and he wanted to jump off. And I really kind of wanted to see what that... I think they put that invisible wall in there for a reason. I really kind of wanted to see what it was going to look like VR when he jumped off the cliff. Because it was like a 200, 300 foot fall down into some rocks and water below. You know, kind of like a seaside cliff. And I really... He's like, can I run off the cliff? What? I can't run off the cliff. So, like, he ran around a corner. And the only other thing... I'll get to that in a second. The only other thing I didn't think of... So he ran around the cliff, ran around the corner, and he tried it again. He couldn't, and he was really disturbed that he couldn't jump off the cliff like through the rest of the video. Here's the only other downside for those of you that are interested in Oculus Rift: they had to put his hands on the keyboard because there's no gloves yet. There's no. It's just the only thing virtual reality is your eyes. So you still have to have hands on a keyboard and mouse. And it's obvious Jamie doesn't play very many video games. Because, like, I'm sitting here right now as we record with my hands at my sides and then immediately going for WASD and my mouse. And I can do it with my eyes closed. Like, I'm literally closing my eyes, putting my hands on my side, going up. And it doesn't take much adjustment. And I can open my eyes. And all that time I was on WAF. But still, I can actually find mine with my eyes shut. But that is something to think about, is the fact that you cannot see the keyboard when you... But anyway, so back to wearable tech. For you, it's a matter of utility, same as the smartphone.
Yeah, I mean, as much as I might have bought something like the Wii U early in the launch, tech is not something that I jump on. I'm not a big early adopter for the most part. So I would have to wait and see what they can show me that it can do and why I want this thing.
Yeah, I mean, as much as I love tech gadgets, I'm kind of the same in some of this wearable tech. It's like, it's one of the criticisms being thrown at the Xbox One is it's too much redundancy. You know, what are these devices going to do that my smartphone... I mean, have you seen how thin the iPhone 5 and Samsung 4, Galaxy 4... Did I get that right? Yeah, Galaxy 4 are. Mm-hmm. You know, it's getting like MacBook Air territory. Like, where I would probably even not be bothered having it in my pocket. For those of you who don't know, John might not either. I hate having my phone in my pocket. It drives me fucking bonkers. I don't like having much of anything in my pocket, especially like if I'm at work where I'm moving a lot, bending, you know, that it just drives me nuts.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, the Droid I decided to go with had a QWERTY keyboard because I wasn't 100% sure about my competency with the touchscreen. Downside to that is no case. Nobody wants to make case for a phone that flips out or, you know, that slides out. Mm-hmm. I will not be repeating that mistake here in October when I get a new phone. Okay, so wearable tech, Glacier, you know, it's interesting, but I just thought I'd bring it up since we had never talked about it, and it seems to be coming more of a thing. You know, like a year ago, I saw the first news of a smartwatch, and I'm like, it was like this big old bulbous thing, and I'm like, dude, your only customer is Flavor Flav. You know. Mm-hmm.
I keep picturing the old calculator watches that you could get back in the 80s.
Did you ever have one of those?
I think I might have had one for a little while before it broke pretty well instantly.
My mom wouldn't get me one because she saw what I did not, that why do you need a calculator watch? You have a calculator in your school backpack.
Yeah.
Yeah. I do. I am kind of a nerd for watches, though. And not like just the super uber expensive ones. If they have a certain look or design, I have a couple cheapies that I just love and wear all the time, because I really like the look of them. So if it's a really cool form factor, utility might go out of the window for me, with a watch. But the Google Glass thing, yeah.
Yeah, though I'll be honest. I mean, Apple are pretty good with their form factors on their products, so it'll probably look pretty sleek.
Yeah, but that's going to come down to, do I want to save $1,000 to get a really fucking awesome Tissot or Tag Heuer watch that's really, really fucking awesome looking? Or do I want to spend $1,000 on an Apple? An
Yeah.
Apple watch that I can't do anything with except what Apple tells me I can do. Let me think
Yeah.
about that.
Yeah,
And for those of you that don't know watches, I mean, they're not by any means the only Class A watchmakers, but Tag Heuer and Tissot both make really, really nice watches. That if one of you fine listeners want to give me one, I'd happily accept it. Mailing address at the end of the show. Okay, so let's move on. Believe it or not, this week we have a van thing, and I have to call it a thing because we moved off from ranting to an actual question. I know it's been a while since we've had a question, but when I told the van ranter that we really weren't going to do video games this week, it kind of backed him into the corner of his van, so he had to do something. So he has a question for us. I don't know whether you'd want to call it serendipity or what, but it's about a topic we had intended to talk about a few weeks back and never got to. So take it away, Mr. Van, man in the van.
What is going on, people? This is your friendly neighborhood Pat Man in his van. It's not raining today, luckily. There's been so much game talk and trash that let's change the subject to movies. It's not going to be a rant, it's going to be a question for the crew. Since we don't have Diddy Kong asking us questions in the Audio Master G, I thought I'd try one. So, what are we going to talk about? There's already been a few big blockbuster movies this year. Iron Man 3 is one of them, Star Trek is another. But for me personally, the movie that I'm most interested in, at least judging by the trailers, now I haven't seen any of the movies, just by the trailers, the one I'm looking forward to the most is Man of Steel. I doubt anyone listening to the show doesn't know who the hell Man of Steel is. But for those of you who never, I don't know, aren't a comic book fan, I guess, this is a reboot of the Superman franchise. There's been quite a few trailers for Man of Steel. In my opinion, probably a little too many. But trailer number 3 is the trailer that I'm talking about right now. It's probably the best one. It has the best combination of acting, soundtrack, story, everything, cinematography, out of all the trailers. I think it's the best representation, probably, for all the trailers. That's trailer number 3 of Man of Steel. For those of you listening at home, check it out. I'm going to ask the members of the WPO crew to do a little fun homework assignment. If you haven't watched trailer 3 for Man of Steel, go on Facebook and check it out. It's about 3 minutes long, and it's probably about the first half is it's about story. And then the second half is all action-packed, so you won't fall asleep, that's for sure. Based on this one movie trailer alone, I'm very anticipating this movie. I like the reboot. I think it's going to be good. It looks to wash away the bad taste of Superman Returns that was left in our mouths, to be honest. Man of Steel looks really good. Hopefully I'll watch it in IMAX or maybe 3D. I don't know. I definitely want to check it out. So, if this is the direction that DC movies are going in the future, then the Justice League movie might actually happen, and it might actually turn out to be decent. So that's pretty cool. Anyways, I'm asking you guys to watch trailer number 3 for Man of Steel, and then give me your impressions. Is this going to be like Iron Man, the first Iron Man movie, which set the stage for the Avengers? Is that what Man of Steel is going to do? What do you think of his costume? What do you think of not using John Williams' soundtrack? What do you think of everything? It doesn't matter. Let me know. Man of Steel, trailer number 3. I am really liking it. But I want to know what you guys in the WPO crew think. That's about all I got for today. I gotta go send some bum welfare check or something. So from my van, maybe next week I'll have a gaming rant. I don't know. But for now, Pac-Man is out.
All right, man in the van, let's talk some Man of Steel. Man of van, let's talk Man of Steel. That the new trailer number 3 that just came out, I have to say that thing is making me want to see that movie more and more. What I really liked about it was the, as much as it's an origin story and a lot of that stuff, it looks really cool, but it seems to be standard fare. But what I did like was the emphasis on, apparently, what seems to be emphasis on Zod. Man, I'm so tongue-tied today. On Zod, and in particular about Zod, his alien, whether it's friends or tech or whatever that's there, which he seems to be on a mission to catch Superman. So there's a lot of really big frames action going on of these huge ships and things getting destroyed and what's different about that compared to every other Superman movie that's been so far is that I don't think he's really had a fight with a comparable being on that kind of scale before. The fights with Zod in the original Superman, in Superman 2, we should say, that kind of stuff, it was a film of its time. The kind of special effects that they could do were pretty limited. At the time, I thought it was amazing because I was, I was what, 6 or something probably, I don't know, and that stuff was great then, but now, with what you can do in movies today, I think the potential for what we could see in terms of what Superman can do being really super, for lack of a better word, is this gonna be off the charts, I think. And I'm kind of happy that Superman is not fighting over some, trying to stop Luthor from getting another land deal. That's classic stuff, but it's time to move on. And if this gets more into the superheroic stuff of Superman, I'm happy about that. It's something that has been neglected, really. I do like the origin story stuff. In that original Richard Donner film, some of the stuff of him becoming Superman was some of the best stuff in that movie. It really kind of, as cliche as the Superman origin story is, it does make him more relatable. Because Superman is the kind of character who definitely, they say it in the trailer, he'll be a god among them. He's not Batman in that Batman is a regular guy, doing extraordinary things. Superman is an extraordinary being who's not one of us, even though he cares so much that he'll do whatever it takes to win. But that human story with his parents and being the small boy trying to, keep his secret, that's all stuff that make us want to care about him even more so and relate to him. So I like what they're doing, what they're showing in this trailer with Clark. We don't see what he does to save that bus from the water, but it must be something pretty cool. And I'm looking forward to this. The other question that the man in the van had was about whether or not I think Man of Steel will be the boost to the JLA that Iron Man once was for the Avengers. Well, I think as long as this movie is as good as I hope it is, I think there's real potential here. I don't know if they're going to spin it in quite the same way with a bunch of movies of different characters before they do a JLA. I wouldn't be surprised if you see them make the JLA movie move faster than you'd think. And I really hope that they have Christian Bale on board as Batman. Rebooting the Batman franchise with a different guy, I would have to think they would have to go back to yet another origin story with him. I think. I mean, the Dark Knight stuff really established Batman for our time, so to speak. I'd be hard pressed to imagine them going back to the well to make another incarnation over a series of films. I think the Christian Bale Batman is ready to be inserted. I think this Man of Steel movie, assuming this takes place after Dark Knight Rises, and Superman comes on the scene, and Bruce Wayne has got the notice. And I think at the end of Dark Knight Returns, Dark Knight Rises, the way that they've had Bruce Wayne kind of step away from Gotham at the end, and I'm sorry about the spoiler there, but he kind of does, it kind of puts him in perfect position to be in the JLA fighting much bigger scale threats and alongside Superman if that's the way they go. So, yeah, I think the seeds of the JLA could be sown here in Man of Steel, because they certainly weren't in the Batman movies. But that cohesive universe is what's going to be key here, and hopefully they can do it.
I'm going to do this backwards, because there was one thing that always pissed me off about the Superman movies from my childhood that this one doesn't. And possibly the one that was, when was the last Superman? 2006? Didn't they kind of reboot him in 2006?
Superman Returns was actually a continuation of the Richard Donner stuff. It's Superman 3 had the other ones not existed. 3, 4, and 5? The other ones hadn't existed.
Okay. Because I didn't see it, because I thought, more Superman. But the JLA stuff, here's the thing. I don't know who's making this. I know that the producer is the same one that did Batman, and that's what, Nolan?
Yeah, Zack Snyder, the guy who did 300 and Watchmen, is the director.
Oh, right, okay. Yeah, and I knew Nolan was the producer. They had better be careful and tread lightly, because... Yes, Iron Man did awesome. Yes, Thor was good. The original, the first Thor. Captain America was good. And so the Avengers was kind of just in a good place. I think the Avengers could have been, and I have not seen it yet, but I've had plenty of people who have give me a blow-by-blow account. So, and I wasn't worried about spoilers, because I watch comic book movies in my own time when I want to. I'm not a comic book nerd. I think the Avengers would have done well no matter what, unless it was complete and utter crap. Because of the string of really good ones. Every Marvel movie has been decent or better. And so I think that as far as the Avengers or JLA goes, I think there's still room for failure there. I think what John said is kind of key. But at the same time, just because one worked doesn't mean the other would. Now, back to the actual Superman movie itself. I'm actually looking forward to this movie, because the one thing that I said in my opener that pissed me off about the earlier Superman movies is they just kind of went, here's this super dude. He's a god. He's going to save humanity. And I always thought, especially when I watched them over again later, as I got older, that, if he actually crashed on this Earth as a baby and had all these superpowers and super strengths, he'd be the most picked on kid in school ever. He'd be an outcast. And when the trailer So trailer spoilers. His father says, you know, was it the father or the mother? One of the two said that he's going to be an outcast. And I thought, okay, now we got an origin story being put on film that I can get behind. And that's really, Man in a Van, what's hooking me in. The big epic battle with whatever enemies, blah, 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 although I like Rachel Adams, who's the woman he's being interrogated by. She's very attractive. That doesn't interest me as much as the telling of the origin tale. You know, because I think, unless they did it in the one in 2006, and I'm ignorant because I refuse to watch it, I think they got it. I think they're going to do it absolutely out of the park correct this time.
Yeah, I think they need to make it. Like this really feels like it's going to be Superman Begins, so to speak, and that it's going to take, you know, Superman back to some roots and with a fresh start. And I think this is a case where they really needed to do it. The previous one, the Superman Returns from a few years ago, it was definitely a love letter to the Richard Donner movies, and you know, they really tried to capture that magic again, but the fresh take is really making me interested in what they're going to do.
Well, I'm probably going to commit nerd suicide for saying this, but doesn't the fact that Christopher Reeves had a less than happy ending, watch out for rocks, people. Yeah, I said it. I can't top Eminem. He's made way more nasty rips about that than I ever will. Doesn't the fact that you know, the ending to his life was rather tragic kind of at pile on the nostalgia glasses for those films at times? Do you think? Or is it because we grew up with them?
I think, you know, that especially that first movie, you know, the origin story there and stuff, you know, and the music, like, it hit so many of the right notes for Superman. It's definitely a hard one to top, you know? It's not like two has its faults, and, you know, two gets a lot of praise, and it's a very good film. And the first one has that silly ending with the reversing time by spinning the Earth around on its axis a different direction, but then again, that's a lot. That's very, you know, pre-crisis Superman type silly stuff that went on. It's, but just the feel, like how iconic that first film was. It is a tough one to top.
See, I labor under this belief, and this is the part where I commit nerd heresy, that when an actor has a tragic end. At any time after the movies, Batman, I'm not even going to cough, Batman, things tend to get overblown as far as, you know, performance and involving that actor. And I'm not saying that Heath Ledger did not do an excellent, just out of the park job with Joker. He did. But, you know, we tend to lose a little bit of our critical vision, you know, when somebody dies before their time. Obviously, Reeves lived to be a lot older than Ledger did. But to me, and I've recently watched the older ones, to me, past one, they're all cheeseball camp festivals. And again, here we go with more nerd heresy. I don't understand why 2 gets the love it does. It's very rare that you see me actually go, okay, hold up. The nerd, you know, hold up. I'm actually going to get like a hardcore critical on something because I'm usually just too big a wuss. I don't get it. I really don't get it. I watch that movie these days and I just go, oh my God, this is just like, all it needs is like, you know, one of the crossdressers from Little Britain, and it's just fucking Camp Central. You know, I just, and so I think, again, I'm actually going to tie this in, Man in the Van, that's what appeals to me about this reboot. Something that Superman kind of needed to be more gritty.
I think Hollywood uses the whole grit and grime angle and paint job as a crutch in some ways these days. But, you know, it seemed like it fits Superman really well. Am I crazy with that, John?
I don't need Superman to be dark and gritty and depressing. I like Superman being deconstructed and what that icon means and how people react to that, you know, in the world if it really existed. You know, the Superman shouldn't. I don't think Superman should be in the shadows.
Oh, no. I don't mean I don't want him to be the Punisher. I don't want him to be Wolverine. I don't want him to be Batman. I didn't mean that level of grit. I'm not talking like 500 miles of road grime. No, I'm just saying a little bit. Maybe deconstructive is a better word.
And I'll give you an example. The way Superman was treated in the Dark Knight Returns comic book, where he was sort of he's Superman in you know, going around, but he's also sort of an agent of the government, you know, who are kind of using him as a weapon, you know, to exercise their might. And that's an interesting use of Superman and what that says about, you know, the American way and all that, you know, all those cliches about Superman. And yet he's here as, you know, the ultimate, you know, weapon of mass destruction. It's a cool way to look at the character, and that's kind of what I want from a new film, just looking at what it means to have a Superman in the world and how the world reacts to that.
Well, I think that's why I like the origin or his youth portion, because I think you're correct. I think putting some anomaly like Superman in the universe, because like you said, Batman's not an anomaly. He's just some mopey dude with a lot of money. Yeah. If we have any comic book fans listening after this episode, I'll be fucking stunned with the way I'm just ripping through their fucking childhood loves. Anyway, but hey, get over it, dude. I mean, Batman is a manic depressive with millions. I mean, look, come on. Tony Stark's a fucking drunk in a tin suit. I mean, really, if you really deconstruct it, my point in ripping on that is you can deconstruct it too much. You see what I'm saying? You really rip it down to the bones. But I think they've gotten it right. And where I was going before I decided to be a smartass was taking an anomaly like Superman as a child and looking at that from a different perspective is something that I think is going to be really, really interesting. In the same sense that you're talking about him being, you know, America's ultimate secret weapon.
Mm-hmm.
Which brings us to the point that the Man in the Van didn't ask, but it was something we were going to discuss because all three of us had talked about doing this earlier, and John and Glacinator forced me to watch the trailer because they know I'm a real pain in the ass when it comes to doing shit like that. No Kryptonite. So, at least all rumors, hints, stills from the set, trailers, everything else, there's not going to be his ultimate undoing, which I am very, very, very happy about. Because it's like, first off, in the comic book universe, how many fucking types of kryptonite do we really need? Second, I think that's what kills the old movies for me today. It's just like, oh, we built up a bunch of suspense here, Kryptonite, you're fucked. You know?
Yeah.
You know, and bad guys run away. I mean, whether it was Zod or Luthor or whoever, it's just like, build, Kryptonite, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, that's what I kind of was trying to get at when I was talking about how, you know, there's these big, you know, space ships and things going on that are a much bigger scale. Like, the Kryptonite is a way to bring Superman down to the level of the average person, so that the average person can get the one up on him.
Right.
In this movie, Superman gets to be Superman and do Superman stuff because he's awesome and powerful, and you know he needs someone who is at least equal power to challenge him, and that's what we're finally going to get, and that they couldn't really pull off in older films.
Well, not somebody a single entity equal power to him. But what I saw, and oh god, here we go with the real nerd film nerd shit. I didn't see so much a single entity or a single person as I did overwhelming odds. Mm-hmm. You see what I'm saying? He's Superman, but if you stack the deck high enough against him, it can make for an interesting movie.
Yeah.
You see what I'm saying? Like, you know, and maybe that is it. Maybe it's the fact that Kryptonite, oh, look, you're now human. Oh, fucking really? Mm-hmm. Dragging him down to our level. I saw that you know, looked at that ship with the ship scene with the ships and stuff more as, okay, we're just going to like, okay, you have to kill 78,567,000 spaceships before you can save the day. Good luck and Godspeed. You know, super, really super stacking the deck against him. And if that's kind of what they're doing, I like that, because I've never thought that his rogues gallery was really the most interesting cast of characters ever.
It's really not, to be honest. I mean, once you get beyond Luthor, Zod, and Brainiac, you know, who's next? Is it, you know, Solomon Grundy, or someone? Or
even outside of, even within his rogues gallery, Zod's really the only one that's a great character that you could write for. Brainiac, I mean, come on. And Luthor, he's trying to buy the whole planet again. Oh, fuck, who cares? So are the Chinese. I mean, you know, I look at it from a writer's perspective, and I just don't. Although, in Brainiac's defense, I will say this in Brainiac's defense, I didn't think Doc Ock was going to make a great villain either.
Mm-hmm.
But that had a lot to do with the dude they put in the mechanical arms.
Yeah.
You know, I suppose if you found the right actor, maybe, you know, because I think that actually that could become a topic for a future show. A lot of what sold a lot of these comic book movies, superhero movies, is the actors that play the villains.
Mm-hmm.
You have Defoe in the original Spider-Man. You have the dude whose name I can never remember, and we've looked it up once before, that played Doc Ock. You have
Alfred Molina.
Thank you. And I love his acting. You have you have the British guy, Ben Kingsley, is the current villain in Iron Man. You know, I mean, they're not all Oscar-level talent, but they all really know how to sink their teeth into roles.
Mm-hmm.
I got Ledger as Joker in Batman. I have not seen the other Batman. And again, it sounded like Bane worked really, really well, but that muscle-bound freak of nature character has never interested me.
Bane is a little more interesting than Venom. Venom's cool looking and all that great stuff, but he's not. I never found Venom to be much of a character.
Here's the thing, in the and I'm laughing because I'm picturing him in my head. In the Batman movie pantheon of villains, the big muscle dudes are safe because nothing could be worse than Mr. Freeze. To me, that movie would have been a popcorn watchable movie today if Freeze was gone. And not because Schwarzenegger can't speak English. That, to me, is just the most ridiculous fucking villain of all time, or one of them. I can buy Poison Ivy better than I can buy Mr. Freeze. And then you insert Arnold and his idea of English, and it just really goes to shit for me. But I will defend to my death. I don't care what anybody says. Danny DeVito as the Penguin was the greatest fucking thing ever. But yeah, it'll be curious to see who did you get the sense that the actual villain for the next Superman was a little muddled or muddied? Like, maybe that's, you know, not something you're going to find out until, say, like halfway through the movie, who the real monster is, so to speak.
In this new Man of Steel?
Yeah.
Oh, I think it's Zod.
Don't bet your boots on that. The way they're playing up the government, U.S. government, if you want to be, you want to say it, or the human government. It's possible, but let's just say I wouldn't be shocked if he ends up with more than one. Mm. See where I'm going with that? You know, the slave has now become the master, so to speak. If you'd like, you know. I could smell that angle. Maybe not in this movie, but maybe a future Superman movie.
Yeah, I'm sure that, I mean, as they try to do, they'll lay the seeds for the next one, whether that's, there's a mention of a character in this one. Like, the trailer would indicate, at least on the surface, that Luthor is not even in it. But you can probably be sure that Luthor has something to do with what's going on.
He better not. They would be. I hope Snyder and Nolan are smarter than that. If you want to drag his bald, freaking worthless ass back out later on, fine. But, oh, God, don't ruin one movie by throwing him in there at the end, a la Two-Face.
I'm thinking more along the lines.
Who's never seen again, by the way.
I'm thinking more along the lines of. Actually, did you see the new Spider-Man movie? The newer Amazing Spider-Man?
No, I have not seen the one with the non-Tobey Maguire kid.
Right. Well, just to give you and just to tell you what goes on in that one, like Oscorp is an entity in this world in the world of Amazing Spider-Man. There's some, you know, people mention Norman Osborn, but you never see him. You know what
kinda
I mean?
Kind of like Acme Corporation in the Warner Brothers cartoons.
I guess in a way, but Kirk Connors works for Oscorp, but you never see.
That's kind of what I meant. You know, there's hints. You know, you see Acme products in the background. So is that what you're thinking? With since Luthor is yet another, can we get over the ruthless businessman craze?
they want this to be a franchise, and if they can get people talking about it now, that just, you know, gets people in the theater. In 3 years or whatever, however long it takes to make another one.
Well, if they do it subtle,
yeah,
I will allow it. Because
I'm not saying like a, you know, Sam Jackson at the end of every Marvel movie. I'm talking more, you know, like you say, subtle hints that there's this person out there who really dislikes Superman.
I was a little surprised who's playing Superman's father. I really like his voice. I really like his speaking.
Which father? Russell Crowe?
Yeah. Sorry. Forgot that. Yeah, my bad, folks that have seen the trailer. Yeah. his biological, or however you do it on Krypton, father. I love Russell Crowe's voice. I know he's batshit crazy, but so what? So's fucking, so's Bale. Some of the best actors of our generation and of our lifetime are batshit crazy. I wish people could just understand that. Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, okay, Russell Crowe beating the shit out of people in a bar in Australia, that kind of crosses the line. Unless you're in Australia. Then it's just an everyday occurrence. But I found that kind of interesting. Wonder how much they had to pay him for such a short role. Well, you know, because I mean, it's not like, you know, he's going to be half the movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, true.
His Earth father's Jeff Bridges, which should work out pretty good.
No, his Earth father is Kevin Costner.
Was that Costner? I thought it was Bridges. Did Costner put on weight?
I think he's just old.
No, Clint Eastwood is old. That's actually Kevin Costner aging, Eastwood looks better. I'm trying to think. I think Costner should only be in like his 60s. I thought it was Jeff Bridges. I just assumed. I'm not a big fan of Costner either. I agree with the Indian guy. The Indian dude should have won the Oscar. That's a bit from the Red Green Show that I expect nobody to get.
Anyway, yeah, it's got me hyped enough that I may go see it in theaters, which is a rarity for comic book movies. I hesitate to even tell you the last one I actually went and saw in theaters, which even I admit, look, I can sit through some really camp crap Huey Bowl festivals and find some entertainment in them usually. But I actually, the last comic book movie I saw in theaters was Elektra.
Oh.
I love Jennifer Garner, but God, that movie was crap. Oh,
that was the worst.
Eh, I consoled myself with she wore a lot of really cool outfits on it, so fuck it. It was good enough. But it was just crap. So was Daredevil.
Daredevil had his moments, but it wasn't
Affleck,
great. It wasn't great.
I'm sorry, but whoever got society to believe that Ben Affleck can actually act is fucking nuts. He's a good director. Now, that part I will give him. He's a pretty good director. He's a shitty actor. After Good Will Hunting, it was all right off the cliff for me.
Mm-hmm.
And on top of that, Damon carried Good Will Hunting. They both won Oscars for it. let's see. Anything else on the new Superman movies? Other than we're obviously looking forward to it.
No, I guess we covered it pretty good. I think. I've always been interested to see Superman done right. You look at my comic book collection. I don't have a lot of Superman, but it's such an icon that you know. I think the character can have a good movie, and I hope this is it for a modern audience, so to speak.
I want to see who's going to be stupid enough to make an Aquaman movie. I mean, they did Green Lantern. Why not?
Yeah, Green Lantern sucked too. That's a topic for a conversation. Is like how do they salvage like the other characters of the JLA? Like, you know, that Green Lantern movie only came out what 2 years ago. They're gonna have to reboot it again.
God, Ryan Reynolds is awful.
Yeah. I mean, there were parts of the movie that were fun, like most of the stuff that they did in space. When once Green Lantern left Earth and was training to be a Green Lantern, and you saw the Green Lantern Corps and all the guys involved in that, and Sinestro, all that stuff, I was down with that. But anything on Earth, just hurry up and get to the good stuff.
I see, that's the thing. The one thing, and I'm, again, for the record, on tape, I'm not a comic book nerd. JLA always struck me as like the Avengers would kick their ass. Or the Justice League.
Yeah, it's hard to say, you know, there are the people who comprise the core Justice League members are some pretty powerful dudes and gals. And you know the Avengers have pretty strong folks. I mean the Hulk, of course, but they're not three Supermen in on the one team basically.
I want a Deadpool movie. They make that. I'll go see it.
They're making a Deadpool game.
Yeah, they have been. It's another fucking Duke Nukem Forever. That game's been in production for a while. I want a Deadpool movie. I just can't figure out which actor could actually pull it off. Deadpool is fucking hilarious.
Oh, yeah. Well, that was the one I thought that... we'd have said his name. Who played Ryan Reynolds. I thought Ryan Reynolds was supposed to do a Deadpool movie.
God, before, I hope not.
Before the whole Green Lantern thing came
about. I think I heard something about a Deadpool movie and then it died. I'm trying to...
Because he was Deadpool in the Wolverine movie.
Yeah. Yeah, but
then they screwed the whole character over by stitching over his mouth. Really? Like Deadpool's all about talking.
Yeah, but it was Ryan Reynolds in the suit. They probably did us all a favor.
Probably.
I'm trying to think who could do Deadpool. Who could play Deadpool today? It would be really good. If you could give him a voice box, Owen Wilson could probably be funny enough. But I don't want to hear his voice in a Deadpool. I mean, I kind of actually like Owen Wilson. I get a kick out of him. I enjoyed the Shanghai movies with Jackie Chan. They were just fun films. They weren't.
They were.
you know, they weren't top-notch production, but for fuck's sake, I don't need that every time. I want to laugh. I just want to laugh and kind of be in on the joke and laugh at them at the same time sometimes, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Anybody says Vince Vaughn for fucking Deadpool, I'll kill him myself. Again, another actor who, when he's in a lead, sucks as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
When he's a supporting character, he's great. Except out of that, except the one he did with Jennifer Aniston. That one wasn't too bad. The breakup movie or whatever they did. I actually sat down and watched that one, but yeah, I don't know who the hell you get to play Deadpool, but I want a Deadpool movie, just not with Ryan Reynolds. I don't think Ryan Reynolds is that bad an actor as I'm slagging on him about, but he's just not superhero-y. It's kind of like Keaton as Batman.
I like Keaton as Batman.
See, I didn't. I couldn't see him as like. I just couldn't. I couldn't suspend my disbelief. I'm seeing him as Mr. Mom.
So you're not able to separate the actor from the character.
In most cases, yes, but all I could see is Mr. Mom. That's
what I mean in this case.
In Keaton's case as Batman, yeah, no, it was impossible. The movie still wasn't bad for me. I got some entertainment out of it, but I just was seeing it'd have been like putting Billy Crystal in it. I mean, it just
Billy Crystal. That's pretty good.
We should do that for some show. Like Trainwreck superheroes.
Yeah.
Although,
I mean Trainwreck casting decisions, you mean?
Yeah, no, like make our own Trainwreck casting decisions.
Oh, yeah, that'd be good.
I was trying to think of another bad one for like well, if you really want to go really like Joe Pesci is Superman. I would watch that just because that would be fucking awesome.
Well, how about
he's like 4 foot what? 4 foot nine? Okay, he's taller than that, I know, but still.
Well, I mean, think about how like the Tim Burton Superman that almost came to be, and that was supposed to have Nicolas Cage as Superman. I think I would just go in a corner and just throw up if I had to watch a Superman movie starring Nicolas Cage.
Well, Ghost Rider didn't really help that any.
Well, that was just proof in the pudding of this, of how bad of an idea it would have been.
Burton has no business doing superhero movies. I love Tim Burton. I've watched almost every movie he's made, if not every movie, and I really like Tim Burton as a movie maker. But there's just some genres he just shouldn't go anywhere near. It'd almost be like giving a superhero, like giving a comic book movie to Tarantino. That's not going to end well. Although, yeah, again,
it's going to be rough around the edges.
In the train wreck category, it might be a lot of fun to watch. You know, Superman with a fucking samurai sword and Barry. Yeah, I mean, just. Oh. Okay, let's move on to our final topic because I do want to get to it real quick because I found it interesting. And if John hadn't said something about it, sorry, man in the van, we're done, I think. We're moving on to our final topic for the evening. Arrested Development, which was on Fox, is now been revived, restored, whatever you'd like to call it, by Netflix. John brought this to my attention. Now, I have to... Full disclosure here, I watched a few episodes of Arrested Development when it was on Fox, and I liked it, but not enough to DVR it and then make time to remember that I have it on DVR. I like a lot of the actors in it, and what I saw I enjoyed, but it just wasn't one of those ones that just really hooked me in enough to make me actually watch TV rather than stuff on the internet. But Netflix has rescued it, and this goes along with Netflix's original series, Hemlock, which I need to get started watching, and House of Cards, which I really enjoyed. It got a little too melodramatic toward the end of the first season for my taste, but Kevin Spacey is a stud.
Is this a trend we're going to see, John, of them saving shows? Are you happy Arrested Development's on Netflix? Are you an Arrested Development fan, unlike me? Or what's your take since you brought this up? I wanted to tie in that they do also have their other original stuff, but
mm-hmm. And well, even those original series are based on they're originally British shows. I think I'm correct in that.
I don't think House of Cards is.
Yeah, it is.
Oh yeah, it is. Yeah, it is, because I've been scolded by a couple of my British friends to watch the original British. My bad.
So, I mean, Netflix are being smart about their first forays into original programming, or semi-original programming, as they put it sometimes, in that they're taking at least an established property and making it their own. So, that, you know, that's smart business on their part, especially when you're jumping into it for the first time. For Arrested Development, I picked up on Arrested Development long after it was canceled from Fox. We bought the DVDs, were cheap, and we bought all of them at one time. And I was reading a really interesting article the other day about the significance of Arrested Development and how it's the kind of show. The way it's written, with so many layers of jokes, and how they span across multiple episodes, I mean, they're not afraid to make reference, like even the slightest reference to something that happened in episode one, season one, all the way up in season three. That unless you paid attention, you might not get the joke. But what that style of writing does, it really emphasizes. The binge watching of television, and this was in a Wired magazine. I was reading this while I was on my trip to Jamaica. I remember now. And anyway, in that they were talking about how Arrested Development was ahead of its time, and didn't really work for regular television. In that it, you know, you really had to watch all the episodes, and it was important that you watched them in sequence, because if you watched them out of sequence, a lot of the references that they were making didn't make a whole lot of sense. Yeah, you know, there might be humorous situations and such, but they're not. You may not get the full joke, and so again, it was a bit of ahead of its time, because today people's viewing habits and where Netflix comes in here in a major part is that people love to binge watch their television now. They'll watch 2, 3, 4, 5 episodes in a row. Rather than watching, you know, 9 o'clock on Friday, making sure you tune in, or else if you miss it, well, you're waiting. You might be waiting a couple of weeks or a couple of months for a rerun, and over the summer. And so, it's choosing Arrested Development to be the first sitcom on their lineup of original programming makes total sense. Netflix is made for binge watching of seasons of shows, and you know they brought Arrested Development out with all the episodes available on day one. There's no, you know, slow churning out of these shows. All let's say there's 12 episodes. All 12 are I can go watch right now. Sit down and spend the day or 2 days and just binge out. And that's the way people do it today. I mean, that's why DVRs are popular. We can record it and watch it whenever we want. We can build up a library on demand. It's all like that's where the television media is going, and I think it's very smart of them to do it. That you know, other than the show being really really funny and really really good, that's what I find really interesting about Arrested Development being on Netflix. Is it's kind of pointing to, in my mind, the way of the future of television, how it's going to be.
Well, it also, you know, I think the one thing that does fascinate me about it is the only other show that kind of referenced prior material, and it's kind of almost become cliche, jump the shark to like it, and I didn't like it until it was almost off the air, and now I've watched every episode, was the way Larry David wrote Seinfeld.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
When he was there. You know, Larry David left, obviously, toward the end. But and I think that was one of the strengths of Seinfeld. Not so much that it was a show about nothing, which it really was. that they would reference earlier incidents.
Yeah.
You know.
Now, with Seinfeld, Seinfeld was so brilliant and it was able to do those references, but also if you just watch a standalone episode, you didn't miss anything by these jokes, but it was an added bonus. Arrested Development, it's an integral part of the show, and the way that season four, I'm not going to get into spoilers because in one way I really can't because I've only watched the first two episodes so far, but this new season is very, very dense, and these first couple of episodes are all set up for jokes that I know are going to pay off as I watch more, get deeper into the season, and if you don't watch them in order, I think you would find yourself in a lot of trouble. So, the Netflix format, the on-demand format, it's like having a DVD without having to go buy the DVDs and watch them all in a row.
Now, these 12 episodes are new to everybody, correct?
Totally new content. It's season four of Arrested Development. 7 years later, or I don't know. I'm not sure if it's 10 years, a full 10 years, but it's maybe eight years later.
Gotcha. Their other semi-original stuff. I have it on pretty good authority from a couple British people that they really enjoyed the American House of Cards almost as much as the British, mm-hmm. if not more. But the thing is that's not really their concept. I mean, look at, The Office is wrapping up its run. For the record, the British Office was far fucking superior. You don't want to get me started on sitcom and sitcom stars these days because I don't have a lot of pleasant things to say about what passes for funny. like Tina Fey, great writer, just don't think she's that funny in front of the camera. I get in my ass in a lot of trouble in my personal circle of friends because I don't have a high standard. I have a Bruce standard. And there's just some shit that just does not work for me. And I think Arrested Development, it didn't have anything to do with the layering and the jokes. I'd already read about that when I watched some of them. Mm-hmm. A friend loaned me some DVDs. But I don't know. I'm still not 100% sure. Maybe I'll watch these 12 episodes of season four and see what it pans out. But this leads to the final thing we'll talk about with this segment and for the show tonight. What's one you want to see him save? What's one you'd like to see him bring back? Only one.
I think I can predict what your answer is going to be, so I won't pick that one.
No, pick whatever you want because I have a pretty good idea. Mine's going to probably surprise you. So pick whatever you want.
The obvious one is Firefly, Joss Whedon's Firefly.
I knew that's what you were going to pick, but that's not. I agree, but that's not where I was going to go. Actually, yeah. From minute one. So, would you like new content, or would you just like it all to be there on demand the whole first season? Or how?
I don't know about in the U.S., but it is on demand on Netflix in Canada.
Oh, it could very well be. I just haven't looked. I just haven't gotten there yet. I'm still trying to work my way through Doctor Who.
Yeah, that's one show that's not in Canada is the new Doctor Who, but which I wish it was.
Oh, I'm still trying to catch up from the reboot. I kind of went on a lull. I haven't been. I need to go back on a binge and watch some more.
Yeah, but as far as Firefly goes, it has such a cult following, and it was such an excellent, such a well written show. Space cowboys. I remember when I first heard that premise, I was like, it sounds okay. But then once you get into the show and the characters, and it's just the kind of thing that you fall in love with, and it's just such a shame that nobody, it was in such a bad spot on Fox, and Fox did a lot of that kind of stuff back then, where they put things out to die, and good content too. I guess if I can throw out another one real quick.
I was going to say, I'm going to give you a second one, because I knew Firefly. I knew when I thought of this question in my head yesterday, that mm-hmm. Firefly was going to be your answer. That didn't make me change mine, because I knew mine when I thought of the question, because as soon mm-hmm. as I think of these questions to bring to the show, I answer them too. but yeah, so I'm going to go ahead and give you a second one. Just fun.
Because Firefly is the obvious answer, I think, but I'm just looking at my DVD shelf, and I saw one on the corner of my eye. There was a live-action television series based around the superhero The Tick. And I used to, and I love the cartoon series. It was really hilarious.
Spoon,
exactly. And the live action show, the first couple of episodes were kind of rough, but if you know, I think it only had 9 episodes. The last couple are really, really good, and also the unreleased ones are really, really good. And if anybody out there has access to the Tick live action, Patrick Warburton plays the Tick, and he plays it just spot on. He nails it every time. And yeah, that more of that would have been fun. And I think, you know, in today's age of superhero movies being so popular, the Tick kind of explored what do superheroes do when they're not, you know, fighting the bad guys, when they're just sitting at home in their apartment, you know, devising the next thing, trying to, you know, even doing menial stuff like going to get groceries. And the first time the Tick catches the flu, he doesn't quite know what to do with himself. That kind of stuff is really funny. And I'll go with the Tick. And maybe the Clerks animated series, but that's not a live action show.
Well, that's kind of like that Dr. Horrible short that Neil Patrick Harris and a couple other acting people who pretend to act that I won't mention because I don't like them. I kind of like that about that Dr. Horrible short with Neil Patrick Harris and that fuckhead Wesley Crusher. Is it kind of gave you the whole perspective? Have you seen? You've seen that, haven't you?
Dr. Horrible, of course. Yeah, yeah, okay. Nathan Fillion's in that one too.
Oh yeah, I do like Fillion. There's just two other jerks in there I really don't like. Somebody finally forced me to watch that because I was not watching it because of two horrible over actors, and I'm just not naming any names. I've gotten in enough trouble over that shit, but. I like that about Dr. Horrible too. That and it was camp and really fucking hilarious. But no, the show to yank it back on topic, the show that I would put on there that I want every episode of, I don't want it redone, but I want every episode at my fingertips never to be removed would be MASH.
Yeah.
One of my favorite shows growing up, even the old, and as I got older, watching the older, the darker, more political stuff that Alan Alda wrote, I love that show. I just absolutely love that show. It's camp, it's corny at times, but it still makes me laugh today. And finding it outside of DVD is almost impossible. Would I like it remastered? Yes, but I don't require that. Firefly would be a good one that I would like to see brought back. But really, they've kind of covered it. You know, I can get Warehouse 13 on there, which I kind of liked. When I watched it on Sci-Fi for a bit, but then again got lazy because it just requires me to move to another room and watch TV. I prefer my games and internet and all that stuff. But yeah, really, Firefly put the entire MASH catalog on there, including the movie, although I have not looked on the U.S. Netflix to see if the movie's on there. I'd forgotten about that. I have actually seen the tick stuff. It's been some time. I'll have to hit up neighbor Fred, my buddy next door, and see if he's got it on DVD and borrow it from him. Because, yeah, that Patrick Warburton really did a good job with that.
Mm-hmm. My favorite episode is the Tick versus Justice, I think it's called, where the tick is brought to court to testify against this villain called Destroyo. And that's probably my favorite one of the set, I think.
Yeah.
And also the he's not a new character. Well, he's a new character. His name is Batman Well, and he's sort of a Latino Batman. And he's an awesome character. And you know, in the old Tick cartoon series, it was Deflator Mouse was the Batman archetype guy. But Batman Well has the Batman, I can barely say it without laughing, the Batman Wellmobile. and how he always double parks the Batman Wellmobile so that he doesn't subject her gilded doors to the threats of digging.
I wonder if some of that you could get away with even today. There was some really well done parody there, but they were kind of. I remember the first time I saw Batman. Well, that I thought, okay, you're treading the line of maybe offending some people. The mm-hmm. only person I thought would have played Batman well better than whoever played him was Cheech.
Yeah. Now, here's a little bit of interesting Batman trivia for you. The fellow, I wish I remember his name, but the fellow who played Batman well played the mayor of Gotham in Dark Knight Rises.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's kind of cool.
Yeah.
But... So, there you go. Netflix is reviving some stuff. We've mentioned which ones we'd like to see revived or at least put on the catalog. Maybe you'd have some that you'd like to tell us about, audience at home. I'm going to give you a bunch of ways you can reach us to do that. First off, simplest, the one used by most, is Facebook. We've got a Facebook. It's WonderPod Online, all one word, as far as I know, or just search for it. Unless you're an obvious bot or spammer, we accept all friend requests. We have a silent army of about 850 people who do not exist, apparently. We have a website, waterpotonline.com. Lots of stuff there. Catalog mostly to go through now. It's kind of become a mausoleum for the podcast, which happens. But the nice thing about the podcast being posted there is we have an embedded player. So you don't have to junk up your computer with any files if you don't want to. You just go to wonderpodonline.com. There's a scroll at the top with the like five or six most recent podcasts. You can listen to it from there. But if you do like MP3s, if you like giving it to go, we are on iTunes in the store, WonderPod, and we are at archive.org. Just search WonderPod in the episode. We have YouTube channels. I've got a YouTube channel under Bruce McGee. We have the WonderPod Online YouTube channel, 36Wii YouTube channel. Just search around Chris Lloyd and his Fanish YouTube channel. All those has stuff we've done in the past. Probably going to be some stuff in the future. But we're also on Twitter, at WonderPodOnline. And we have an email address. It's WonderPodOnline@gmail.com, WonderPodOnline@gmail.com. Or you can follow me on Twitter, at O-R-I-G-I-M. Or you can follow John on Twitter.
I'm at John Kehoe, J-O-N-K-E-H-O-E.
Until episode 161, I am Bruce McGee. I'm out of here to make up some more rules. See you, people.
Cheers, everybody.